to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Alley, just about member of the board. Back again after, I think we were sabotaged by the Russians on Friday night.
Well, when they cut your stream, that's one thing. But then when they cut all your phone lines, that's a whole other thing.
This is bull, I think. Somehow or another, we were screwed. What are the two guys, what are the two ducks walking away in the commercial? We need a new agent. We're getting shrewd. So, we were down on Friday. Sorry for that. We had all kinds of stuff. We're trying to make up for it. Today and tomorrow, we got some of the guests piling back in. As everybody can imagine, there's stuff to talk about. S&P futures now down 60 points. NASDAQ futures down 130. It's because we have a pretty big sell-off in Europe. We got the DAX down almost 3%, FTSE down 2, CAC around almost 3. So we're, even though we were pretty flat last night, as soon as Europe opened, we started heading, the wrong way for most people. Some people are short, although people that are short have been carried out for 20 years. I don't think it was still short, but maybe somebody was. Anyway, do we have Frank? I think we'll have Frank in a second because we have a difference in calling in now because our, in the world we live in, for those, hey Frank.
Good morning, Tom.
In the world we live in where everything is supposed to be so easy to do now, after all, we got the internet. You know, we got everything going for us. It now takes like 60 to 90 days to port over an 800 number from one server to the next. And what caused all this stuff on Friday was that PTI Securities decided, hey, you know, we've got more business. People are smartly using us to do some hedging with this market here up this high, and we're getting more and more clients. And we decided, hey, you know, with all these quote feeds coming in, we need not just the one we had, which was pretty good. We need the latest and greatest system. So we've, like, doubled the size of our system. Of course, whenever that happens, we have a separate system for the show. And of course, somebody pulled that plug out. Why wouldn't they, right? So it's all fixed now. But it takes a while to get the 800 numbers ported over. So what do you make of this sell-off? Although we are coming back here a little bit. We're only on 56 now. And not so good, Frank, eh?
We're down 56 on what? I have 66.
That's because you're 10 minutes behind. Because if you look at the CNBC number and the internet, you're 60 something. But if you look at the feed out of our IB, which is live, we're 56.
I have a live feed too, so that's
really
interesting.
Yeah, maybe your live feed isn't on the latest and greatest fast system like we do.
I think it might be, but I'll pull up another platform.
Well,
things are, you know, if it's down 66, they could be porting 800 numbers, too. It's
66, 56.
Tell us when they do things like that.
Yeah, 66, 56, what's the difference?
10 points.
10 points, yeah.
Spoken talking like to somebody that lived numbers.
Yeah, no, I was talking like a true trader, but I have a question, and it's the same question I've had. By the way, I have zero answer for it. But as everybody knows, a lot of the listeners and a lot of other people have decided, I get virtually everything that is around regarding the COVID. I get now, I'm like COVID central, which is fine. It doesn't mean I know anything more than anybody else. It sure doesn't mean that I know as much as a doctor. Absolutely not. But the interesting part is what I've, conclusion I've made here is that we, the population, everything we get that's real news is coming from overseas. Now, I think I mentioned to people that a few weeks back that I tested positive. And I was stunned I did because I felt like I had a mild cold, which I get this time of the year all the time. And so I talked to my doctor, and then the head honcho of the coronavirus from that whole area. And he said, something's happened in the last 2 weeks. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, all of a sudden, because we have not had any procedures that have been We're doing the right thing. We're getting everybody tested before they come into hospital. He said, but we have not had one procedure that's been canceled because somebody mysteriously showed up with COVID when they didn't know they already had it. All of a sudden, in the last 2 weeks, all kinds of people are testing positive, and when you call them up, just like you, they're the most shocked people on earth. What are you talking about? I feel fine. He goes, something has changed. And he thought it might have been it could either have been a cold, a COVID cold that was wandering around that was tripping the results because the tests are now so sensitive. He said, or this thing has mutated into a form that's way more contagious and less deadly because people don't know they have it. And sure enough, now, 4 weeks later, we get this flash from Europe. Hey, we think we got a mutation that has made this thing more contagious and less deadly. Now, Christmas in our family, we've done it the same way for 100 years because Dan, brother Dan, has, you know, with all the kids and the in-laws, you know, you got to logistically do this stuff. And all of a sudden now everybody on the other side of the family, I'm going to say 10 people have it that have managed to make it from February till now, you know, going out, working, doing everything. I'm not saying going out without masks and partying. I'm talking about just doing their regular stuff without any hint of getting it, and all of a sudden it's all over the place, especially on the south side. And you can't tell me something hasn't changed. And if it has, Frank, why am I getting the information from Boris Johnson?
Because if we talk about this, in March, when it started, I said we needed a federal response to a federal problem or a national response to a national problem. We have never collected data. Data collection and testing is worthy of an eighth grade science project.
Right. The tests have been certain states doing certain stuff or certain hospitals. It's never been coordinated.
Right. So we don't have clean data at all. And without data, you don't have information.
Well, I think you're probably right. I mean, I don't know where the hell
And we've talked about that. That's why I said we need a Marshall Plan to figure out what's going on. It's comprehensive. It's not just testing. It's, you know, treatment. It's vaccines. And we put Jared in charge of it.
Yeah, well, we seem to put a...
surprise, surprise.
Yeah, well, what are you going to say? You know, he's...
And the CDC has been gutted. They may not have done as well as we thought they would have done, but it has been gutted.
Well, the only thing I think about this is harsh. I don't know why. You think if I was ever like a chairman of a company, I'd still be dumb enough to give movie references. But I do. I look at the World Health Organization. I look at the CDC. You know, I can't stop thinking of the line from Major League where Tom Berenger sells a. Was it Martin Sheen or Charlie? Whatever the Sheen was the pitcher. He said, what do you say, Ricky, this is the out you've been waiting your whole life for. And these guys, literally, this is the issue that these guys have been getting paid for 40 years, and they blew it. Right?
No. It starts at the top when you got rid of the pandemic response team. We never even used that document. And it was ignored by the administration.
You know how many documents there have been?
And ignore the WHO. Ignore any world organization.
Well, the WHO.
It was a federal responsibility. It wasn't a world responsibility. We, as the United States of America, had a responsibility. And we dropped the ball. And I'm going back to Harry Truman, which says the buck stops here.
Well, you are...
This is the last time you've heard our president or vice president talk about the coronavirus other than taking a victory lap on vaccines.
They took the vaccine, or Pence did.
Yeah, yesterday, Lindsey Graham and Marco Rubio took it. Marco Rubio's what, in his 40s or 50s?
Now, why are those...
You get it, and you don't, I don't.
Well,
why does my wife not get it, and everybody else working in the DMV?
Well, everybody...
Lindsey Graham?
Yeah.
Come on.
They're essential personnel. They're essential.
Oh, they're essential. Then they should have worn masks more often. Of course, they were wearing masks in the picture. The only time you'll find a picture of Lindsay with a mask.
Well, the...
I'm sorry to go on a rant, but this is absurd.
Well, it is somewhat absurd. I think... How would it be if I was the in charge and I were to say, okay, the people who... are going to get the shots first. They're going to be the guys who deliver your sandwiches, the guys who cut your grass, the garbage guys who have to sit next to each other in a truck. all the people that actually are essential. Shouldn't they be the guys that get the shot first? Or actually, probably most
of them. In-person teachers. There's still some of those.
They probably, you know what the thing of it is? Probably most of those people already had it.
We don't test.
I know. The idea.
I can get a test for $3 in Germany that works. I can't get one here that I can get the answer in 12 days.
Your antibody test comes back in a day. Mine did.
You got to pay for that antibody test that comes back in a day.
Little known fact.
I can't go to CVS and get it like I could do, you know, Save AS in Germany.
No, but if here's the deal. If your doctor prescribes it, it's covered. If you do it yourself, it's $125.
Then you got to pay a doctor, Tom.
I know.
It's not accessible. We're talking about accessibility in medicine again.
How does a guy like
Major problem in this country.
How does a guy like you not have a doctor in his pocket?
A doctor in his pocket? I've moved twice. I have doctors in my pocket.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, but I got to make the call. It's much easier to go to CVS and get my six-pack of PBR and a COVID test. It's called accessibility, ease of accessibility.
I don't think they, you know what, that test takes a, you know, a serious blood draw. I don't think, they don't do that at CVS, do they?
No, they don't, but they have tests that are accurate enough.
Mine was antibodies. Mine was the full, you know, stick it in a vein and pull out a chunk. It wasn't, a needle, a fingertip test or anything like that. It was real.
It tells you about the power of labs in the United States medical system.
Well,
and the AMA.
Well, it always made sense to me that, especially in a hospital environment where half the people probably already have had it or more, that if you get 1,000 inoculations for 2,000 employees, that the first thing he would do is give everybody an antibody test and find out the 1,000 people that needed it and give it to them. But I don't think there's any logic like that wandering through the system, is there?
That's why we have a testing problem in the United States. Nothing quick and easy.
Well, if we thought that that was the right thing to do.
It's systemic, Tom. Yeah, it's logical. We don't have the numbers. We don't have the tests.
All right, so now that I've got you out on the plank here and you're ready to jump.
No, I'm ready to lock and load.
Okay. Oh God, you and Carl in this man's army, each locked and loaded, walking down the street together, hand in hand. That's something. That's a picture I want to see.
The difference is, I'm not a supporter of the Proud Boys.
Oh, all right. Well, you're the left boys. What's the difference?
No, I've always been a lone wolf. You know that.
Oh, God. All right. So here's my question. Why is it? And I don't get the another movie reference. Did you ever see the original Bourne Identity? The one that was in
No, I read the book.
Yeah, well, when the
I'm sure I watched it.
The one Richard Chamberlain
along the way.
The one Richard Chamberlain was a miniseries.
No, not that one. If it's not.
If they're not people blowing people up, you don't care about it. No, I understand.
Right. If there's no body count.
Guys like you and Dr. J, if there's not like 48 huge explosions in less than one page of script, you guys don't like it.
No. I'm from Indiana. Come on.
God. In east of Minnesota. There's a connection there somewhere. Anyway, the original one was the guy in France was talking about he gave his life to his country in public service. And public service used to be something that was a serious job, where you actually were very proud to be somebody who worked in the CDC or somebody to work, that you had a real job, a real function, and you were proud as hell of it. And how he goes today, nobody wants any of that stuff. And it was an interesting, essentially eulogy for the guy, and for the guy who was dead. Not the guy talking, obviously he wasn't dead. But, you know, now you wonder, these people, they come and they go, and it's always a stepping stone to something else. I mean, you wonder why the numbers we get are basically horse bleep, you know, and how we just keep. Yeah, we had dinner Saturday night, friend Audrey's and her boyfriend, nice guy, conservative but nice guy, and we were talking about like inflation numbers, and I just said, you know, over a long period of time, our people have just been essentially rubed, you know, for lack of a better term, they've just been rubed. I mean, you look at I'll be real brief here, but the inflation from 2000 till today, according to the CPI, is 0.52 or 0.55, somewhere in there.
That's annualized?
That's if something was worth a dollar in 2000, it's worth $1.55 now, I mean, according to the CPI.
Okay, gotcha.
But now, the games that go into this, you know, everybody who's listening, I think, unless you're Mr. Electric Current and Windmill, has an electric bill. And I have been in my apartment now for 20 years, right? Maybe a little longer. When I first got there, my electric bill was $32. All right, so then everybody, that was before they had any of these other kind of light bulbs. So as soon as the fluorescent bulbs came out, the squiggly ones that nobody uses anymore, unless if you have one in a closet, the thing never dies, so it's probably still there. So I went around and put all those in. I said, why should I have all this heat and why should I use all this power? So my bill drops to $25. Now this is in 2000. And over a period of time, then I went from there to the LEDs and so forth. So actually, like, I probably used less power than I did in 2000. And now my bill is $50 or $48, $49.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at a point where now the electric company, instead of giving me bulbs like they used to that were hugely inefficient to run up your electric bill because they charge you, they made money on the power. They were smart enough to say, we don't want to make any money on the power. What do we care? We get the power from somebody else. We don't even care if we make it anymore. We'll just charge all these idiots just to bring the stuff to their front door, and we'll run that by the state. Well, now I think my base charge is like $40-some. You know,
what's your delivery charge?
Your delivery charge. And there's probably a tax in there, too. So now, essentially, even your electric bill, my electric bill has doubled since 2000. Well, it's not 1.52. It's double. Right? So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, how is it that people don't recognize? And the guy says, well, what do we need to do? He says to me, Saturday night, I said, we need a recharge. We need to take the CPI, look at 15 different items they've obviously bleeped up on for 20 years, and make an adjustment. And I think the adjustment would be like double right now.
Well, we need to do that on a lot of numbers.
But what is it going to do?
I mean, for example, you can't have governors like DeSantis in Florida changing how you count the numbers.
Well,
and then when somebody complains, sending in the state police to execute a search warrant. That's the problem. There's no respect for pure data.
Well, you
or science.
You lefties and you ready guys. Now that I'm in the middle, I can call you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Somewhere along the line, and I think I tossed this one or spilled coffee on it or something. my files. And if I had an assistant, that's what they would do all day. They just scan these articles so I could find them again. Of course, I probably still couldn't find them again. But there was one regarding the budget, the national budget, or the national whatever you want to call it, and deficit. And it was spectacular, Frank, and I have to try and find this someplace. Every single president since Kennedy, maybe not this guy because I don't think you know what the numbers were, every single president since Kennedy has made an adjustment to how the national deficit is reported. It essentially is one more lie and it doesn't matter whether they're Democrat or Republican or whatever. Originally, the Social Security was considered part of the budget, and then somebody took that out. So now the Social Security surplus, when there was a surplus, was actually in the budget. So you're supposed to be saving. I think that was Johnson or Nixon, one of the two. I mean, it doesn't matter whether you're a Democrat or Republican. Every guy did something. Reagan did something else, and Bush did something else. So when you used to run this massive, Social Security surplus, you'd be up, say, $100 billion in your Social Security. Well, you knew that because as people age, you're going to need that money 10 years from now. And they used to pull that out. So if the rest of the federal budget was $100 million in a hole, it showed $100 billion deficit because you took the Social Security out. I think it was LBJ, crude as he was, said, "Oh, wait a minute, let's put that in and say we're even." So that was like I think that was his contribution. Kennedy did something minor. Then Johnson did that, and Nixon did something else, and Reagan did something. I mean,
they had wars. Anytime you have a war, you got to hide how much it really costs.
Well, the Gulf War, for sure, we put that one on a credit card. I mean, it was...
Oh, we put the war in Vietnam on a credit card. You and I graduated into, talk about, that's where stagflation came from, was
right,
the payback on the war in Vietnam.
But, here's the difference, you know, because I even heard some people on TV talking the other day about World War II and how we were, how much money the federal government owned as a percentage of the GDP after World War II. The difference is that in those days, the government borrowed money from our people. I doubt very seriously if Japan was buying U.S. debt in during World War II.
Or China.
Or Germany. I don't think Adolf was investing in U.S. paper so he could fight the war against them. So, as a country, and Milton Friedman gave this answer to a question in class one day. He goes, as a country, it doesn't matter. See, now Milty, you know, he didn't realize what was going to happen afterward. He says it's just like the Fahey household. I'm sure that if anybody owes somebody, you probably owe your wife $1,000. You know, so Milton Friedman said, looking at the house, you don't care about that. The house is flat. He said, so if in this country the government borrows $100 million from the population, the country's flat, right? But now when you start talking about people outside the country, now it's not flat. So in Vietnam and those other kinds of places, our money started to go in, especially when you dump the Arab oil embargo in there. When they were making all that money, they started buying our paper. That had never happened in World War II. So it was if you count the thing differently, it's different, right? Because one was your own people. It's one thing to go out and send a $20 bond to Matty Weber. It's different than to do a $20 bond to a potential enemy, right, in terms of policy. So right now, our deficit is way different than it was after World War II, I think. Just in terms of
can we take 9/11 off the bill?
Speaking
of enemies.
You can't take Iraq 2 off the bill, because I was reading stuff where people were saying that we start talking about long-term care for the people that got legs blown off and stuff. It was going to cost $1 trillion. I'll bet it's double that. Maybe.
And here we are, still waiting for the weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah. We're still looking for those. Although I think he probably had some, and he had
1,000-to-1 bets with people on the other side. I said, they aren't going to find these. It's the Gulf of Tonkin again. You know, there's people that owe me millions that won't even admit it.
And guess what? You'll never get it. All right, so I got us now down 73, Frank. This is getting serious. What?
I got us down 73, too. Obviously, one of my platforms had a different closing price for the H1.
Yeah, hey, you know what? I shouldn't admit to this. But I don't. Where do you find, when the spiders keep trading after 315, I think there's a separate, how do you find out the actual closing price when it's moving all over the place?
You know, that's a good question. We obviously have a price. I would go to the CME.
Yeah.
They're the ones that are responsible for disseminating it. And the that'd be the March contract. The December contract expired on Friday.
Yeah. Well, it was Friday morning, right?
I'm always confused on the SPX versus the...
No, no, I'm talking about the future. The December future expired on the CME, I think, on the opening print Friday morning.
Probably. I got to check again.
What, all right, so today, at the risk of, I'm sorry to say that I don't have my people short basically out the behind this morning, but I really did feel, Frank, that the minute this thing got signed, it was going to be the last one, and it was going to be a selling point. Every day we came in and the market was up in anticipation of the deal, and then we get the deal and we're down. Now, do you think this is we're down today because the deal's over, or we're down because of the virus?
I think we're down for lots of reasons.
Are we going to stay here, or is this a bite of dipper day?
Every time we've seen people put out of business because they keep on thinking that it's not a buy the dipper day.
Yeah.
If you have profits, take some of them. You know, I am a fan of scaling in, but, you know, past 4 years says that hey, you got to buy the dip. But there's only a month more of this stuff.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to say it's been a, you know, it hasn't been the best trading the option volatility like I like to do. Hasn't that been a huge roaring success the last several years, because all we did was go straight up. But now the last few months, it's been pretty interesting, Frank. And I noticed a little few weeks ago, I did a lot of these, I'll use the term an extended butterfly. They're not a butterfly because they're not margined as one. Where I was, I'd buy, somehow or another, 2 weeks ago, the implied volatility for the end of the year options at December 31st dropped in relation to all the rest of them. So, and then a lot of stocks. So I put several positions in where I bought the December 31st and then extended them into a butterfly. Like, in other words, I would buy one of the December 31st, say, 60 puts, sell two of the, you know, maybe the 3 week ago, 55 puts, and then buy one of the 50s. So you'd get three, four rolls out of the thing if you didn't get right. clobbered right out of the gate. And virtually every one of those worked swimmingly. I mean, tremendously. And now the volatility has jumped back. I mean, I think you really have to be on your guard for when you do get these situations where the volatility split a little bit, the implied, you got to pile on. And the rest of the time, I think you just got to be careful. I mean, it's...
Exactly. And volatility's an ephemera, especially when it expands, meaning it's short-lived.
Yeah.
And so if you're long volatility and it comes in, you have to take that profit.
Right, right. It doesn't stay.
And up. A lot of people didn't. They didn't last in the pits once we could measure Vega.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, we got the VIX. Before the market here this morning, I got the VIX up 762 to 29. That's a huge jump, Frank. That's a huge jump. Hey, might talk to you before the rest of the week. If not, I'll talk to you for sure before Christmas.
Oh, you'll talk to me before Christmas.
Yes. Maybe I'm talking about on the air. I might have you. All right, buddy. Take care of yourself. S&P futures down 70. Nasdaq futures down 142. I did not expect this. We were flat last night. We'll be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ali. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P Futures down on 65. In between 65 and 70 since we walked in, so it's a big number. We were down only like 4 or 5 points last night at the lowest when I went to bed. It was after the last football game. S&P Futures up, down 137. Dow down 492. It was down over 500, but 492 is pretty close to 500. Max down 386, 2.8%. This kind of started over in Europe. A FTSE down 139, 2%. CAC around down 149, 2.7%. In Asia, we got the Nikkei down only 48. Supposed to happen after these guys closed. Minus 0.2%. Shanghai actually up 25.7%. Hang Seng down 191. That's 0.7%. This is a review. Friday, the Dow is down 124. S&P's down 13. NASDAQ down 9. We've got bonds down 4 basis points to 0.90. After they look like they're making an assault on 1. We'll come back the other way today. 1 minus 0.60. Japan positive 0.01. So that Japan never seems to move. Oil, this is a big number. Down 177, it's 3.6% to 47.33. Brent down $2 to 50.19. Natural gas unchanged at 270. RBOB down 6 cents to 133. Gold is not moving very much. Down $5, 18.83, still pretty high compared to recently. Silver, though, up 46 cents, 26.50. That's wild. Copper down 6 cents to 357. Matty, wild morning. What do you have for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
I would say so. 37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a good start, though, Chief, on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. A lot of folks beginning their holiday vacations this week and certainly next week as we have Hanukkah underway, Christmas Eve on Thursday with Christmas Day on Friday, and then, of course, the New Year's holidays the following week. And I think the traffic ways are expressing that because we have absolutely no delays, no accidents, no salt stalls to speak of. So if you are heading out this morning, enjoy a nice quiet commute. Weather today, mild temperatures, not expecting any sunshine, but it'll still be relatively pleasant out there. Overcast skies with a high of 45 today. Right now it's cloudy and 36 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, they have plenty of sunshine, sunny with a high of 75. Right now it's clear and 42. In sports, the Bears' six-game losing streak appears to be in the rearview mirror, Chief, as they've now won two in a row and are back at 500 at 7-7 after they outlasted the Vikings in Minnesota, winning 33-27. Both teams needed this game badly if they wanted to keep their faint playoff hopes alive. But the Bears with a big win up in Minnesota, knocking the Vikings down to 6-8 and probably eliminating them from the playoffs.
They're gone.
Yeah, Mitch Trubisky was solid. Good, not great, I would say. 15 of 21, 202 yards, one touchdown, one interception. That's a 98 quarterback rating, which isn't bad. But David Montgomery was the star of the show. 32 carries, 146 yards. They stuck with the game, ground game early and often. 4.6 yards a carry, including two touchdowns and a long of 19 yards. He was very good as he has been for the last several weeks. Mitch also ran the ball pretty well. He carried it 8 times for 34 yards. Allen Robinson led the team in receiving, as he typically does, 4 catches for 83 yards, but Darnell Mooney had the lone touchdown reception on offense. So Bears are now 7-7. They'll take on the Jacksonville Jaguars in a game the Bears will be heavily favored in next week. If they win that one at 8-7.
Hey, tell that to the Rams.
That's right. They'll have a shot. The Cardinals, ironically, are the team the Bears are chasing, Chief. The Cardinals are 8-6, one game above the Bears after they beat the Eagles 33-26 yesterday. So the Bears obviously need some help if they're going to get that final wild card spot. Lastly, Sunday Night Football, it was Cleveland taking care of the Giants 20-6. In college hoops, Northwestern stunned number 4 Michigan State 79-65, blowing them out in Evanston last night. And Illinois had an 11-point lead at Rutgers, and they blew it in the second half, losing to the Scarlet Knights 91-88.
Jay, how does who's doing the Johnny with us?
Yes, hey, I'm here, Tom.
Hey, bud, how are you?
Good. You
okay? Who did the who's doing the color of last night's game on Sunday night? It was a
Isn't it Collinsworth?
Yeah, he was evidently getting massive tweets and emails and stuff from Jet fans. Jet fans were irate that they won.
Well, I'm sure. I mean, they're when you're 0-13 or whatever. Yeah, I think they were 0-13 going into that game, and you basically have a lock to get the number one pick. The last thing you want to do is start winning games and fall into the number two slot.
Well, who's the number two is? Who's the team that's like 1-1, they have 1-2? Is that who is that?
Let me look at the standings. So the Jets are 1-13 after inexplicably upsetting the Rams to win their first game of the season. The Bengals are 2-10-1, so they're in the thick of it. Jacksonville's the other 1-13 team. So now Jacksonville has a legitimate shot at getting, you know, Trevor Lawrence, assuming he's the number one pick, the Clemson quarterback that everyone expects will be number one. And Jets fans are certainly irate from that. But it's basically between those three teams with Jets and Jaguars.
I didn't realize that there's a tiebreaker for that.
So what is it?
That I don't know. But they said if they both lose out, that Jacksonville gets the number one pick.
Wow.
I have no idea why. I thought maybe you would know that.
Did they play each other? And well,
no, they both. I mean, I don't think so.
Yeah, let me see if I can find that. I don't know the tiebreaker
Number one pick.
I've never seen two teams that are both like 1-15.
No, I bet it's happened, but I never didn't know what the tiebreaker was. I mean, I can't imagine what it would be. So, John, what do you think of this massive sell-off here this morning?
I don't know what to make of it. I didn't see that coming.
Especially because I kept looking last night and it didn't happen. All of a sudden, I was mentioning earlier, I don't want to go through it again. I don't understand why there's such a flash on this. And this mutation on the virus, it happened in May originally, that I was reading a report from an Italian doctor, and now it seems like it's happening again. But that's essentially, I'm not a virus expert sort of dude, but that's what happens. If you happen to be a disease, and the minute you get into somebody, you kill them, you don't do too well, right, as a right. disease. So the diseases always seem to want to become more contagious and less... And less killing of the host. This has now done it, appears to be twice. There's no hint that the vaccine's not going to work, right? At least as of yet.
Right.
And if the fact that it's less deadly, I think that's probably good news, isn't it? You would think.
I think it's great news.
Well, if it is, I mean, as of now, it's the jury's still out on that. But if it is. I mean, that's not horrible news, I don't think. But I've been thinking all along here, Jack, because every time I thought the market was going to go down, I've always been wrong. But I've been thinking that the minute Congress actually does come up with this deal, that it actually probably was a sell. That as the as it continues to go onward, the thought of the deal, we're like encouraging Congress to do something. Now that they are, we're up to. So it looks like what checks are going to be $600, right? Not at $1,200.
Yeah, that's what I've gotten out of it.
And the extra unemployment, well, they're going to extend it past the 26th, and it's going to be 300 hours a week. But I don't know if you saw this thing I sent I don't know when I sent you guys stuff, the other night probably. I think, well, it was for Friday's show that there wasn't one, so I probably sent it to you Thursday night, where it's by Greg Iacursi, which we've read his stuff before. He's pretty good. Pain, despair, and poverty reach fever pitch for unemployed workers. And I don't know who I was, you know, I had a question from somebody who called me last week, and they said, what do you think of the economy? I said, I think 20 to 30% of the economy is in a depression. And I think another 20 to 30% is still in a recession. Then you've got some that have made out like a bandit during this thing, depending on what they're in. And you know, the restaurants that are open, you know, the stores that are open, the big box stores, Amazon, some people are doing fine. And whether they're passing it on or not, I don't think Amazon's giving everybody a big raise, because I think they can get all the employees they want at $10 an hour.
Oh, sure.
You know, so...
Absolutely, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I think that somehow, if you listen to the financial press, and all they talk about is the market, and they're the people that are still getting a check, you get a whole different view of the world than if you talk to other people. And this has been this way for 8 months, you know, and it's getting worse and worse. I mean, the anyway, according to this article, the amount of people that are, you know, living in their cars, the amount of people have blown through all their savings, I mean, in this whole mess, I mean, it's endemic. As much as the pandemic is endemic, you know, right?
Well, it's epidemic, you know, suffering,
you know,
financial suffering now.
So. Yeah, but I don't know how you, you know, this particular bill is going to help, but I don't know, how you get people back like this. I mean, I mentioned this before in the 2008 fiasco when people lost their houses. It's one thing when people lose, quote, their job for a while. You get laid off. I mean, there's business cycle recessions, and then there's other kinds of recessions that are not so good. Business cycle recession, still, if it's you that's laid off, it's not good anyway. But correct me if I'm wrong here, John, but in a business cycle recession, the economy gets a little too heated, it slows down, some people get laid off, and all of a sudden there's opportunity and you bring people back. And people are laid off for, you know, 2, 3, 4 months. The plant doesn't really shut down. I'll use an old school thing. They just cut back to one or two shifts from two or three, right? Then all of a sudden things get a little better and people come back and they get called back to work, and there's unemployment in the meantime. And it's not the best of situations, but it's not you lose all your savings either, right? But now in the Great Depression in the 30s, the thing of it was you actually went to the bank and got the door slammed on your nose. Not only did you get a broken nose, you ended up with your savings are just gone, right? Same thing happened in 2008. Your equity in your house was just gone. An amazing amount of people borrowed, you know, the $40,000 from Ma and Pa, which was their, you know, the whole, if you listen to the subset out of it, you're going to get some, I use the term economic buffoon, that will say it was all just people who shouldn't have mortgages in the first place, basically screw them. Well, that's a very shallow, very ignorant interpretation of what went on in 2008. That might have been the catalyst in some areas, but I'm going to say the great percentage of houses were people who put 20% down, bought a place for 230, and 2 years later it was worth 160.
Right, and in the meantime they had improved it.
Yeah,
they had done nothing wrong. You know, they were just taking care of their place of residence and expecting it to grow, not necessarily astronomically, but that they certainly wouldn't see their equity just eroded. So yeah, maybe it was precipitated by people who had no business owning a house in the first place, but everybody took a hit on it.
Well, interesting.
Some people were still taking a hit.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, so it essentially wiped out people's savings and equity. And once you do that, it's a longer slog back. I mean, right now it's not a question of the people. And I don't think it was on a couple of weeks ago. I was reading this article that the passing of the cash. How's that for a wealth transfer? Is that a better way of saying it? From generation to generation was supposed to be something like $6 or $6.5 trillion between essentially the baby boomer generation and their kids. But this analysis said how many people in the baby boomer generation, their money was actually in their businesses. You know, whether they had, you know, restaurants or whatever they had, or not all restaurants, but whatever businesses they had. And that this article said that they thought that in 9 months, 25% of that wealth was gone. When you're not getting that back, John.
No.
I mean, it's just, you can give somebody some unemployment for a few weeks, but you're not getting that big. But here's a phenomenon this morning as I'm looking at the market that's getting cratered everywhere. Not quite everywhere. Goldman Sachs up $7. J.P. Morgan up $4.50. Nike's up $9. So we got a couple of banks we don't even like. So there must be something in this bill that people didn't expect that's going to help the banks out. And what, they're going to give $15 billion more to airlines?
I think so, yeah.
Now, you know, I don't, John, I don't, explain to me this. You're the level-headed, you know, teacher, lawyer kind of guy, and me, I'm just Mr. Number Knucklehead. How exactly, when you have 9/11, and you have airlines all of a sudden can't fly for whatever, I mean, no business really can anticipate that. And they are businesses that obviously we need in this country. So there's going to be some help, right? There's going to be I use the term bailout. And I don't think anybody necessarily disagrees with some help going that direction because it's nothing anybody can anticipate. It's like an asteroid landing on your head, right? Or at least that's the story. So, okay, we do that. And now they come back and all of a sudden they're smelling like a rose, right? Instead of smelling like the part that goes over the fence last because the airlines have been. Now, all of a sudden, they're doing great. And now, for the last 10 years, they've made more money than in any span of 10 years they've ever made in the history of the world, airlines. And maybe 12 years. So, all of a sudden, now, you look at a place like United, and I went through this, and I didn't go through every single number in their place, but it looked to me like virtually every dime they made in the last 10 or 12 years they used to buy back stock so that the stock went up and the people on the board and so forth that had stock options made money. Heaven help you, you're not going to pay a dividend because the stock would go down if you did that. But you didn't like show up if you're picking up two or three planes a month. Like not once did you show up to Boeing with an actual check and just say, I'm buying this plane. You couldn't take 1/15th of the money that you were buying stock back with and actually buy planes. So at the end of 10 or 12 of the best years you've ever had, and I mean, they probably own some that they got cheaper, but they basically still lease every plane they own. Now, this happens with the COVID, and again, there's no way on earth that some airline could anticipate something like this and have enough money to cover themselves for 20 to 30 to 40% business for a period of a year. I mean, you just can't do that. I mean, I don't see how anybody could do that. So, again, would there have to be some kind of a bailout or something? I'm going to say the answer is yes. I'm not going to be a total knucklehead and say, don't give them a dime, let them all go under. Yet, somewhere in the middle, John, can I get my pound of flesh here somehow? Can I say, get all those bleeps off the board? Or if they would have bought, how many planes does United fly? 500? 400, if they owned 100 of them rather than leased them all, then instead of giving them $50 billion, I'd have to give them 40 or 45. The number wouldn't be zero, but it shouldn't be 50 either. I mean, they didn't have to buy all that stock back. They could have bought some. I mean, you and I might be simple enough, and maybe we've made Maddie Weber simple too, that if we're going to go start an airline, the first thing we might think of doing is, hey, maybe we should buy a plane. No, they don't buy any planes. They lease the plane, right? But, well, what manner of moron would buy anything? I mean, if I use their mentality, every computer screen I'm looking at, every microphone Maddie and I are talking into should all be leased. Why should we buy anything? Screw it. I mean, somewhere along the line, you've got to build some equity in your place instead of just giving yourself dough when you sell stock back to the place. I mean, can we at least have somebody come out on national TV, the president saying, hey, look, you bumps, I would really like every one of you to resign from that board. Or something. There needs to be some. Am I totally off the wall here or not?
No, I'm with you on this. I mean, I never flew routinely, you know, certainly in the last 20 years or so. But the times I did fly United since, 9/11, I thought, here is an airline that bills itself as world-class and, it's been around forever in the Chicago, base place. And yet I just saw the quality of service plunging. I mean, and I thought, well, they're clearly not putting much energy or certainly not money into this operation. I mean, their on-time record was deplorable. The facilities, the terminals that I've been to, I thought were, you know, in need of renovation, just upgrading, and just basically they needed to be better run for an operation that seemed to be making so much money and that had been the beneficiary of largesse after the 9/11 collapse. I thought, this is not a well-run company. I mean, I have friends who have worked there, and, you know, I kind of hear horror stories about it like you do about every place. But it just seems, you know, wrong at some level to keep throwing money at a badly run operation that has no incentive ever to clean up its act very much. And they're not the worst, I don't think, right? Either in transportation or otherwise. But I think they're symptomatic.
Well, when you pull the competitive piece out of it, which they really have.
Right.
You know, you end up with, you know, it's, you don't want to go back to this, but back before airlines were deregulated, they all charged like too much money, right?
Air travel was extremely expensive.
Yeah, which is not a good thing, okay, but the weird part was they competed in other ways. I'm not so sure they're politically correct. Didn't they used to like weigh the stewardesses every month?
Oh yeah, yeah.
and your dinners
were canned them after they reached 32. Or
yeah, and they're wearing Armani gowns, and let's just say there was not anything extra under those Armani gowns. But you can't, you know, that's. But the point being is, right now, when I was flying a lot for a couple of the companies that I never flew a real lot, but I flew some. Remember when they deregulated, it was the weirdest thing, John, because business people were still paying full bore. And yet if you were a charter guy and got it like 3 months in advance, so literally if you flew to Cleveland, the guy next to you might be paying, you know, $60 and you're paying like $350 or something. It was an incredible disparity in the prices, depending on if you were like last minute or whatever. And the weird part was the flight attendants, I'm not going to use the term stewardess to show my age, the flight attendants immediately dropped down to treating everybody as if they paid $50.
Right.
And the poor guy who paid the $350 goes, "Can I get my cup of coffee?" But they treated everybody as if they were the in steerage. I'll use a term from the past. And it was interesting how you dumb down the service. But anyway, I'm saying I don't know why there needs to be something. Yeah, I know you guys need a bailout, but it shouldn't be 50. If you owned half your planes, it'd be 25. And that's more palatable, right, than 50. But we don't get any of that. We just keep pouring money at places. And I don't, whatever. I mean,
well, yeah, there isn't any kind of incentivizing of, you know, being smarter when there are downturns that you have no control over. And, you know, these industries have gotten used to the ultimate bailout. They just have to kind of wait in line, you know, like the other behemoth operations, and they know there will be money for them. But it just galls me that there is a greater sense of how much is within their control when times are good to be more resilient.
Well, I think it would make sense, and I don't know how the hell you'd do this, so I'd find people that were smart enough to do this. It almost seems like you would like to, if you were going to bail an airline out, that you would bail out the industry based on, like, you know, passenger mile lost or something, where the companies that are better run would end up way better. And if a company, if the money you gave them wasn't good enough, they still were out or something. I don't know if that would be what you'd want to get. But, I mean, there's got to be some sort of a formula other than whatever you need or whatever your lobbyist can finagle out of me when he's stuffing a check in my pocket. I mean, that can't be the recipe, and yet it is, it appears. I mean, how much does United, you got to give United? Their lobbyist says they need like $30 billion. Well, fine. What's his bill? One bill? Is it part of the 30 or what? There needs to be a better way, John, somehow. And now, if we lose, and I'm not saying we're going to, even though we're down 62 points here, if we start losing the market, in terms of the market valuation dropping, it's really the only leg of the stool that's working here that I can see. That and the companies that you're forced to deal with, the Amazons, the big box stores, and the McDonald's of the world. In fact, I was one of the people I was with at the dinner Saturday night was a McDonald's employee, and I'm just rolling with the flow, having dinner, minding my own business. Oh yeah, McDonald's is doing great, you know, and Same store sales are up, you know, like 6%. What do you figure McDonald's has raised their prices in the last year? 20%?
15%? Oh, probably in some places more than that. I've heard of, you know, $10 quarter pounders in some places.
Well, I mean, the place we went to, like I said, I've said this a few times now, we went to dinner at this place outside in the tent on Saturday night, and had a nice time. And, you know what, Jen? I've been trying my best to support the places that I used to go to as best I can. But they're really making it very difficult. $24 for pasta? Come on. I'm a pretty fair Italian cook. I know that pasta costs $3 to make. What are we going, 7-1 now on stuff? Or 6? In terms of what they charge versus what it costs them? I mean, where are we going with this? You know, is 4 ounces of pasta that cost you 40 cents one of these days going to be like $80? I mean, what's the limit? Are we, you know?
And I'm really disappointed. I've seen it in restaurants that I do want to patronize and keep going. But you look at their bar tab, you know, what they charge for a glass of wine, what they can charge now.
Yeah.
If they're bold enough to be open at all, you kind of, you know, swallow your pride, or you're generally economizing, you know, goal to spend as little as possible, and you spend more. And I think, well, this isn't really part of a recovery when you start doing this to people. This just makes it harder and drags out the pain and suffering.
Well, there's a new place opened by me, and I went out to get stuff for my workers, right? I mean, I'm not a big lunch guy, but... So I get these guys a double cheeseburger and fries, two of them. Guess how much? At a walk-in place, not a restaurant.
20?
It was $29. Oh. French fries are $4.50. I think the last time I checked, the potatoes, like, what does one potato cost? A dime? 20 cents? Jesus.
Huge potatoes.
Anyway, hey, when we come back, John, we're going to have a special guest, Mr. Kevin O'Neill. I want to talk about this thing that's in Congress regarding the NCAA. And I figured that you two guys together, you being the attorney and him this sports genius, we'll go through this. And pretty interesting. It would change the world as we know it. I don't know if it's going to pass, but we'll go through it. S&P futures still down 67, haven't really bounced back. NASDAQ futures down 146. In fact, those are lower. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom, just my member of the board. S&P futures still down a bunch, still down 64 and a quarter. NASDAQ futures down 136, so we're not taking any prisoners there, except Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley are up. I don't know what's that all about. I'll try and find out. Nike's up. Evidently, nobody listened to our show about them using the concentration camp labor committee. Anyway, I guess nobody cares about that. You got to eat your Nikes.
That is one of the most interesting hypocrisies going right now, is everyone rightfully, you know, being active socially when it comes to you know, Black Lives Matter and things like that, while all wearing Nike shirts, yeah, and Nike shoes and Nike hats.
Yeah, it's I don't want to get into it, but I couldn't believe the other day they had
not to mention carrying iPhones.
Yeah, they had a guy the other day talking about how many small businesses that are going under, you know, how many of them are minority owned, which, you know, is a lot. I mean, how can I say this politically correctly? If you add the people of Greek descent into it, how many restaurants are Greek owned? But clearly, there's a lot of, you know, African American businesses that are owned by people that are having real trouble with this. But the interesting part is, they showed a bunch of graphs of minority owned businesses. Of course, they got this black guy in there talking about how it's affecting the black community, which it is. But the amount of places that are getting torpedoed in the Hispanic community was like twice as many. Now, that doesn't make it easier for the black people or the white people, but there doesn't seem to be any. Is there any Hispanic person we ever talk to about this stuff? We just don't worry about them. I can't get over talking about minorities and never have anybody talking for them. But that's another story. Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Matt. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Kevin.
Well,
good morning, listeners.
Yes, what I want to talk about.
Well, before you jump all the way off of that, yeah, Hispanics as a group are more entrepreneurial than just about any other group, ethnic or gender or anything else. That there's just more of an entrepreneurial spirit there for a lot of reasons, so it's definitely hurting them. And with the explosion of business startups in opportunity zones over the last few years, those are generally small businesses, and those are among those that are failing now as a result of all of the lockdown policies that we have. So, yes, there is a disproportionate effect on just the people that we, well, let's just say the people we least want to affect with it.
Well, I received a actually, I didn't, but I got Audrey did, and so did Greg. I guess a post, or a, what do you want to call it, an epilogue from the place down the block, Tutto Italiano. And I've known these guys forever, and all of a sudden I get this thing, and I said, hey, we've been here for 20 years, we've had a nice run, and all of a sudden we got nobody, and we're out. And it's just a shame. I mean, they're good guys, and anyway, whatever. Anyway, I want to talk to you gentlemen from kind of the legal side and the NCAA side. Obviously, Matty, part of this as well, because he's Mr. Sports. This is an article by Liz Rosher. I think I got that correct. Landmark College Athlete Bill of Rights to be introduced in Congress. And the people that are behind this bill, not saying bad or good about them, just saying Senator Cory Booker and Senator Richard Blumenfeld of Connecticut, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York, and Representative Jan Schakowsky of Illinois. I don't know if these people are Democrat, Republican, what they are, but landmark peak of
law. Well, at least the first three are.
They're Democrat or Republican?
Democrat, yeah. Democrat.
And I think maybe.
But Booker is the one who initiated it. The others are, you know, I'm sure, you know, people who have worked with him on other legislation. But Cory Booker is played football at Stanford, so, you know, he has a personal interest in this that's a little, or let's say an interest in it that's a little more personal than most.
It says, while most recent college athlete bills have been focused on granting them the rights to profit off their name, image, and likeness. Booker's bill goes way beyond that. And I'll just go through this real briefly, although, you know, the article's revenue sharing. The bill grants name, image, and likeness rights to athletes and requires schools to share 50% of the profit. Now, there's a good number. Profit. And the minute I hear that, my cost accounting background here goes up on the back of my neck. I can define profit about 100 different ways for just about anybody. But from revenue-generating sports with athletes, all schools would also be required to disclose the finances of their athletic departments, which I guess, Kevin, you would say that the people like Illinois has to because it's part of the state of Illinois, but like Notre Dame doesn't. That's correct?
I think everybody's got to file at least. Well, first of all, you have to file the expense side of the equation as part of your Title IX filing, right? Title IX compliance filing.
Okay.
The revenue, is often misrepresented in there because it is an optional part of the filing. It's there, but it's optional, and many schools just plug the same number in there as their expenses. It's amazing the number of schools who have revenue equals expenses to the dollar. And then, you know, we get a lot of journalists who turn around and report that, you know, as a number of significance when they just really don't understand what they're seeing. But continue.
Well, but I mean, if you say picking our alma mater, for instance, if the football tickets are $80, but it costs you $500 in a donation to get on the football ticket list, the $500 is probably not counted.
$500 is probably not counted in the equation because that's a donation to the university.
Right.
Other things that may not be accounted specifically for a football or a basketball program might include some of the media, the media rights that the schools control, because they will sign deals that cover everything, including some of their non-revenue sports, and they can spread that around. And then there are all kinds of apparel agreements that may or may not be off the books, coaches' shows that may or may not be off, you know, that are probably off the books. So you name it. The accounting for this is all over the place.
Or no place.
Well, you know, somebody's probably tracking it. You can believe that a coach who gets paid for a coach's show knows darn well what the finances look like.
So to go back to the untouchables, there's the bookkeeper someplace.
Yep, there is a bookkeeper someplace, and those books are under a mattress someplace.
All right, so continuing, scholarships. College athletes would be required to receive a scholarship for however long it takes them to complete their undergraduate degree. And I don't know if it means you can quit playing football after 1 year and still be there 6 years later, like Belushi, I don't know. Bans administrators or coaches from influencing their choice of major and from retaliating against them, the choice is something they don't approve of. In other words, if a guy goes in, I think this means, that's what I'm asking you guys, I think this means that if somebody comes in and wants to be in pre-med and has labs 3 days a week and can't go to practice, he has to be able to take pre-med. I think that's what they're shooting for, is it? Am I correct?
I'm sure. You know, that's the meter all the way in one direction, because it's pretty hard to become a starter, to not have a consequence if you miss three practices a week.
Right.
So, you know, you got to be careful with that. But let's just say you chose engineering or something like that. You may remember back when Harbaugh was at Stanford and he was talking about Michigan steering all their people into general studies because it was an easier major. And they were strongly discouraged from majoring in business or anything else that was more challenging.
Rocks for jacks.
Well, yeah, and you know, every school has its easy courses and its easier curricula, but the question always becomes: is it a real academic curriculum, or is it something that was made just for the athletes? And there are some out there that are made just for the athletes.
Well, it's an interesting world, because Dr. J's dad, who I really, really liked, and I like to think we were pretty good friends, he passed recently, everybody knows, and he was a big man, and he played for Cal. I mean, talk about a guy who loved football. That dude would sit there in the middle of the night watching a high school game and watch every play. That was a great play. Doctor, you don't even know these people. I don't care. It's a great play. You know, whatever. But he was in, obviously, in medical school at Berkeley, And the coach said to him, Jan, make every practice you can and help us out on Saturdays. Of course, they weren't paying him for his education, but can you imagine a coach saying that today?
No.
You know, I mean, anyway, this I'm not so sure I agree with. Transfer freedom. All restrictions on transfer athletes would be removed, as would the penalties for breaking a national letter of intent. Sounds to me like people would be recruiting all 4 years, all over the place.
Right.
I don't know if I'm up for that.
Well, we're already there for the most part. If you look at the number of people now that they have this transfer portal, and you look at the number of people who are in it, it has become a big thing, especially in basketball, because if you lose a couple of people, your roster's short.
Yeah.
And some coaches have been quicker to adapt to that than others, but the number of people who, teams that are caught short on scholarships. If you look at last year's Notre Dame team, they had recruits who are, who left the program, who are now starters at Oregon or Texas A&M or Indiana, all really good programs. Imagine, what last year's team fell off so badly. Imagine if they had all, let me see, Jordan, where there's one more. Another two at Indiana. So you can imagine that you put four starters back on your team. Four expected starters back on your team. You're a little bit better.
Well, but you also, the last thing you want is some guy starting for the Irish on Saturday and starting for Indiana on Tuesday.
What they're looking at and discussing right now is a one-time amnesty where you get to transfer and have immediate eligibility. I don't know if that will be December transfers included or if it will be transfer at the end of the season. But that's already up in front of the coaches, at least for basketball.
Yeah, because, a lot of guys, you're perfectly blunt, get lied to by these guys. You're going to be my... you're the only center I'm recruiting, blah, 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 I need you, and you show up and there's five centers there and you're number three in the depth chart. Why should you waste your whole career there with three guys ahead of you? I could see where one time it wouldn't be a bad. Anyway, medical costs. Medical trust fund will be set up that covers out-of-pocket costs for college athletes while they're in school and could be accessed up to 5 years after graduation to cover costs of sports-related industries. I will tell you the quick story of George Conner, passed a while ago. Anyway, George Conner was a big star at Notre Dame, and then he went to play for the Bears, and he was at a big career. I think he's Hall of Fame. I'm not positive, but Eddie, check that, would you? I think he's Hall of Fame. Anyway, I was talking to him one night over an adult beverage. He says, Tom, how many surgeries do you think I've had? And I said, George, I have no idea. He goes, like 21. They were football-related injuries. He goes, not one of them was paid for by Notre Dame or the Bears. Now, obviously, there's something wrong with that, guys. It had been most people's thoughts. How you fix it, the detail for fixing it, how some of the stuff didn't happen in high school, I have no idea. It might have. Did Andre Dawson get hurt in high school? His knee. So, how you apportion a knee replacement, or a knee replacement happened back then. Some kind of a corrective knee surgery when you're 60, how you apportion the money between the pro college and in high school, I have no idea.
By the way, he's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame and the College Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he was both way threat. My cousin, who ended up with a artificial knee, went to Tilden Tech and played halfback for the University of Colorado. He goes into the doctor. The guy takes an x-ray of his knee. He says he's in the other room checking the x-rays, and he yells out, hey, Al, where did you play halfback? Never even knew he played football until he saw the x-ray of his knee. So, he goes, how'd you know? I'm looking at the x-ray. I know. there's, I don't know how you apportion that. I don't think 5 years cuts it, do you?
No.
Probably 10 wouldn't, but, wherever you draw the line, I suspect that it's going to mean a lot of programs are just going to dissolve. There's no way a smaller program can sustain one or two long-term responsibilities like that to their athletes. And this maybe it would be fairer if they could, but I think they would probably just as soon get out of the business entirely because there's no way they can ever make this program profitable then. So I think you'll see a real winnowing out of mid-sized programs or smaller programs. If any of this stuff is implemented, it's going to change the number of sports programs
Well, one of our common friends, not Dr. J, but the other doc, his son was playing at the University of Chicago, right? So he tears an ACL, which for most people, that, I mean, you look at football and you go, oh, God, you got to get your ACL fixed, and so you play football again. But in reality, a lot of people used to go through life with a torn ACL, right? I mean, you put on some kind of a brace. You can easily walk around and do your job without an ACL. I mean, you might not want to go downstairs carrying a load, but so the kid's still playing football in a brace. And he says to him, you get that fixed at the University of Chicago. Don't listen to those people that you're okay. The last thing I want is you coming out in a year from now getting it fixed and me paying for it. Make those idiots pay for it. So, you know, he got it fixed when he was a senior, but University of Chicago was not all, they were saying, oh, no, you're fine type of thing. They didn't want to pay for it. So, yeah, I don't know how you, all right, health and safety standards. We're doing too much by the time we get through this. The governmental level will create enforceable health and safety standards through the Department of Health and Human Services. Boy, I don't think these locker rooms want these guys in there. And Centers for Disease Control, they're doing such a good job with this other stuff. And a special focus on traumatic brain injuries and sexual assault in the same sentence. I'm not so sure that belongs in the same sentence, but I don't know how that would be work. It says...
That's already being... it's a contentious issue, but that's already addressed via Title IX, too. Schools. I mean, every school is required to have a process for reporting and dealing with sexual assault.
But here's a great line. Bill could be a headache for the NCAA. You think so? could be. I'm thinking...
And Tom, simultaneous to the bill, there's... And I'd be interested in John's take on this as an attorney. There's also a court case.
The antitrust case.
The antitrust case. And so it's an appeal. An appeals court ruled the NCAA's limits on providing education-related benefits violate antitrust laws. And what's documented in the Sherm article I sent you guys was that thing, stuff like computers, other equipment, postgraduate scholarships, paid internships, and all that, and that's all capped. So the NCAA gave a little ground on a stipend to cover expenses, but it's very, very capped. So I don't know, John, what do you think of that that particular case and its merits?
The
court has become pretty hard to read about some stuff. So it's hard to say. I think generally there's hostility to, just look at the conservative drift of the court towards the players or the students in this case. So I don't see this being any kind of a positive thing for leveling the playing field or giving students the right to be compensated for the use of their image or endorsements or whatever else. I see this as being kind of not likely to be knocked down by the court, but I hate to go out on a limb with what I've been seeing happen in the court lately.
It seems like there's a couple of issues that are involved. One is whether or not the college athletes are considered employees.
Right.
So far they have not been ruled that. So that becomes part of it, because once you make them employees, then there's all kinds of labor law, workman's comp, all those things come into play. But the other one is the NCAA's argument that says, well, this is just going to fundamentally change and possibly ruin college sports, to which I sort of say, well, if you're operating illegally, then it should.
Time to shut it down anyway.
Well, the interesting part is a lot of interesting stuff. They were saying that this is going to fall along party lines. Why should this be party lines? I don't get the idea. I mean, I don't care if you're, sorry, John, a conservative attorney or a liberal attorney. The idea of having one national letter of intent that every school uses. I mean, I don't care if you're conservative, blue, green, black, brown, red. How the hell could you do you read the Antitrust Act and not realize that that's illegal?
Right.
I mean, it's like having every accounting firm.
You can't commiserate on your extracurricular activities?
Well, I mean, the idea of having every every financial or accounting firm make guys sign a letter saying you can't go from one to the other or something like that. It's the exact same in everybody's spot. People would be horrified if they did that. Well, you think they would anyway.
Yeah, and so I always have kind of a oh boo-hoo attitude about that. I think the reason it shakes out on party lines, my guess for that would be that it's really just, you know, what's the role of the courts versus what's the role of legislature versus what's the role of the market. And so, you know, there could be an overarching philosophy that lines people up along party lines, but I'm using that as a possible explanation. I don't know that it's true.
Well, let's hope it's not as simple as if the five people that sponsored this bill are Democrats, that all the Republicans have to line up on the other side just because.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I hope not.
I mean, just guessing no on that because, you know, they do a lot together. It's just the big things where they tend to fight.
How powerful are the? There seem to be a lot of people, and it's this I can't. I mean, obviously, our group was all over the game on Saturday, and to me, it's a spectacular thing because it gets all of us to talk for a few hours that haven't really been together in 45 years. So, if it keeps us together, there's a reason for us all to text back and forth, or if we're in the same city to meet together for a beer and watch a game. To me, it's a spectacular thing. But the idea of us ever being so—I hope none of us are this goofy—to be together and want to fire coaches that have an 80% winning record and putting money up to buy coaches out of contracts and the millions of dollars just to get rid of the guy. I mean, I would hope none of us would ever be that dumb, and yet there appears to be all kinds of people in this country that are just that stupid. And I don't ever like to call anybody that, but collectively, not individually. I mean, for God's sake, when your team wins, does yours grow an inch? I mean, mine never did.
mine couldn't possibly.
Yeah. I mean, what are we doing? There's only so much you can bask in the reflected glory. I mean, to me, at Notre Dame, it taught me a lot. I got to go to a really cool thing on a Saturday and watch a game. But guess what? On Sunday, I still had to do my homework. It was still due on Monday, whether they won or lost. Right? So, I mean, to a certain extent, it was terrific. You got to go watch something like that or watch to see Austin Carr play or whatever. But it didn't. I mean, you also realized the limits of it. If they won, you didn't walk in and tell your professor, by the way, I didn't have my homework because I was partying all weekend. That never flew. So, I mean, there's limits to this, right? I don't think our group would ever say, hey, everybody send in $1 million. We're buying the coach out. I mean, I hope not.
Oh, yeah. Besides, when I was in college, I didn't do my Wednesday homework either.
Yeah, well, that's another story. but I mean, these guys, I mean, it can get over the top on this, you know, I think. I don't think that those guys will be, do they really like it the way it is? I mean, with the little cheating and all the other stuff that goes on?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of people who like it the way it is, whether it's clinging to this notion that somehow amateur sports are more virtuous, I think most people understand that, you know, that there's a lot that happens under the table, but they like to believe that it's worse everywhere else than it is with my team.
Well, is it, I guess the question I have is it somewhat coming unglued anyway? I mean, you look at the national championship stuff here, and, you know, the Irish managed to have a pretty good team, and now this year all their juniors are going to get drafted, so who knows, they might be lousy next year. But my buddy Beldo, who I haven't seen in ages because of the COVID stuff, but he used to give me, I mean, he's into this stuff. Kevin, he makes you look like a child when it comes to digging through every, I mean, he'll tell you how many people every school's got committed for scholarship in July. Like, who cares? But some of the stuff he was telling me last year, it was interesting because schools that you would think that have a huge, like he was saying, Alabama, what, there's 85 people getting on scholarship. Is that the number or 90? I think it's 85, isn't it?
85, yeah.
That, you know, an awful lot of schools that you think have big-time programs, maybe because it's the, you know, the coaches aren't out hustling or whatever, they're nowhere near the 85, at least a couple of months before. He said Stanford at one point, like 2 months before the season started, had like 55 guys and scholarship for football. Now, whether they filled in with why, who the hell knows? But he said Alabama is oversubscribed. You're supposed to have 85. They had like 92 or something. And the other seven guys are going to some junior college, allegedly at their own expense. And if you believe that, I got a bridge for you. They were like waiting in the wings. And you know, so if somebody quit or somebody transferred or somebody got hurt, all of a sudden they could pop right in. And I'm thinking, you know, whether you think this guy is a good coach or not a good coach, that difference is dramatic, I think. You know, I mean, if and Stanford's a pretty sizable program. I mean, is Northwestern, are they struggling to fill out 85 people? Where Alabama's got, you know, 90 or, I mean, the Irish had like one extra. I mean, but some years they've struggled to get the 85. They've had 80, 82.
Well, back when Tyrone Willingham played golf instead of recruiting,
yeah,
I think when Weiss came in to replace him, he had something like 62 guys on scholarship.
But I guess what I'm asking is the current system that some people seem to love so much, is it starting to fracture?
Yeah, I think, you know, you can see it in other areas, and the whole thing is starting to fracture too. So you look at Uber, and you know whether its drivers are employees or independent contractors, and there's a lot of industries like that that have sprung up and mushroomed recently, and you know, that applies a lot of pressure to the systems that want just to go along as we've always done it and expect people to go along with how we define what you are, and that we don't want to give you bargaining rights, we don't want to give you, you know, the status of an employee. There's all sorts of reasons why, you know, employers don't want to do that. And it's nothing new, but it's become accentuated now as jobs generally have been transformed. And you've got people abasing themselves or debasing themselves to hang on to any kind of a paycheck. And they're not going to, you know, continue to do this without getting something back. And I think, you know, it's also gotten out of whack in the NCAA to an extent that people want some change. What that will mean, though, is you're going to have an unrecognizable kind of system at the end from what you're used to.
Well, I mean, I look at, before we let you go here in a second, John, but I look at the same teams, or the same coaches, I guess, for lack of a better term, that are always this, quote, upper tier. And for a while it was Georgia, for a while it was Florida State. It seems like people that somehow, I'm going to say, operate in the gray area and get a higher proportion of the 4- and 5-star people and even 3 than other people and seem to be willing to play that game for whatever the game is. I can't say as I can describe the whole thing, and I don't think you guys can either, Kevin maybe. But somehow or another, the Irish are in there 1 year. I mean, and they're going to lose enough people this year, right? I could say equivocally they will not be in the Final Four next year because they're going to lose 10 people and they don't have the 10 people to replace them. Same thing happened to LSU. So there's a few teams that are kind of barking at the door that can get in any 1 year, but you're talking about the Clemsons, you're talking about Alabama, you're talking about possibly Georgia will be back in there. These are teams that seem to amass all these people. I mean, are they becoming almost an upper crust where there ought to be an 8-team league on top of the rest of the NCAA? Because clearly Wisconsin's not interested in doing that. They want people from Wisconsin and maybe a few other people. Iowa's got a good team, but they're not Alabama. Same way with Indiana. I mean, the guys made remarkable strides getting people Marist in the South Side area of Chicago, but they're not Alabama. I mean, are we almost reaching a two-tiered system here by people that kind of, you know, do what they can do, go with the spirit of the rule, field a good team, and other people that seem to be off the chart? Is that where we're headed?
And I think we're well on our way. Yeah.
What do you think, Kevin?
Yeah, I think there's long been a mindset that said that the biggest of the big should split off anyway and do their own thing, and then, you know, everybody else can be left to the more traditional college business model. And that might make sense. I think John's point about Uber and tying that in here, these are business models that were created primarily around employment arrangements.
Yes.
And I think that's a precarious place to be. If I were a business strategist looking at this, I'd say, you know, we're subject to the whims of employment law. And that changes real quickly, and we've seen it challenged already, both in the NCAA and in other contractor arrangements. And so, you know, you really are in a precarious position. If it doesn't happen this time around in Congress, it could just as easily happen, you know, another time around in a couple of years.
Right.
Yeah, whatever you want. John, we're going to let you dash. We're going to give traffic, weather, sports, and we'll bring Kevin back. SP Futures still down 67. We're bouncing here a little bit, but down 72 to down 67 is not much of a bounce. NASDAQ hasn't bounced at all. Still down 145. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks and Jocks. Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom. I just met Warren on the board. We have our Santa Claus rally, a time of the year that the calendar helps the market out. Not so much today. Merry bleeping Christmas. But today, S&P Futures, whoa, we're only down 59.75. No, up 60. NASDAQ Futures down 133. Some combination of this bill being passed, evidently, today, and the new COVID strain. The market does not like it. Dow down 477. Over in Europe is where the sell-off started. We got the DAX down 441 at 3.2%. Ouch. FTSE down 171, 2.6%. CAC around down 171, 3.1%. In fact, that's getting worse than it was earlier. I mean, that's not good. Nikkei down 40. Now, none of this really happened over there. And I say last night, I kept checking the market. We were down just a little bit. This happened in Europe. Nikkei down 48.2%. Shanghai up 25.7%. Hang Seng down 191.7%. So nothing major over there. As a review for Friday, Dow Jones were down 124, S&P down 13, NASDAQ down 9, so nothing major. Bonds down almost 5 basis points, down to 0.90, Bund minus 0.60, and Japan up positive 0.01, so that much change there. Oil down 215. That's almost 5%. It's 46.95. It's still higher than it's been. Brent down $2, 50.15. Natural gas down 2 cents, 267. RBOB down 6 cents, 133. We got gold down 480, so not much movement there. Silver down 13 cents, 25.90. The copper down 6 cents, so a little bit of a drop, but not, again, not much with the big rally they've had lately. Then we got Forest Traffic Weather Sports. All kinds of sports.
All kinds of sports this weekend. 39 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still very quiet on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways, Chief. No issues at all coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower Stevenson looking good. Same for the Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford. Lakeshore Drive quiet in both directions. Suburban tollways are all quiet. Off the expressways, we have two issues in the area, both in the western suburbs. First, in Wheaton, it looks like there's a crash at Gary Avenue and Lincoln. And then north of there, near Hanover Park, there's a crash on Gary Avenue and Central. But those are the only two crashes in the area. Weather today, it's going to be mild temperature-wise, but lots of clouds in the area. High of 45. Right now, it's mostly cloudy and 37 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 75 today. Right now it's clear and 43. In sports, the Bears are back to 500, winning their second straight game, this time up in Minnesota, topping the Vikings 33-27 to improve to 7-7. Bears are still very much alive in the NFC playoff race, one game behind Arizona, who won, beating the Eagles 33-26. Sunday night football, it was the Browns over the Giants 20-6. Finally, in college hoops, Northwestern with a big upset win over Michigan State last night in Evanston, 79-65. And it was Illinois losing at Rutgers, 91-88. Chief.
So who's on top in the National League East? I mean, are everybody still alive there, even though...
The NFC, you mean?
Yeah.
So the National League East. Shifted to baseball there.
Well, it's National NFC.
So who's alive in the NFC playoff race?
Well, are they still all alive, all the teams with like four wins?
No, unless you're in the NFC East.
What's the name? Who's Dallas won? Has that put them back in the hunt?
So, yeah. So the NFC East right now, Washington is atop the division at 6-8. The Cowboys and Giants, both having the Cowboys having won two in a row and the Giants having lost two in a row, are now one game back at 5-9. And then the Eagles are 4-9-1, so they're like 1.5 games back. So really all four teams are still alive, but Washington, even though they lost to Seattle yesterday, is still on top.
Did you find out the tiebreaker for the worst team?
I did. So it comes down to opponents' winning percentage. So the team that played the worst opponents would get the number one pick.
And that would be Jacksonville.
So right now that's Jacksonville, yep. Isn't that funny?
That's bizarre.
So, it's just simply adding up the wins and losses of all of their opponents, and whoever is worse wins the tiebreaker.
So are we official that this is the Trevor Lawrence Derby?
Well, that's what everyone says. Very similar to last year with Joe Burrow, the LSU quarterback. Doesn't mean that Lawrence is the only good quarterback, though, as we've seen. Justin Herbert with the Chargers looks like he might be every bit as good as Burrow, if not better. Tua with the Dolphins looks very good as well.
He was hurt,
but he's starting to really come into his own. Yeah. So now you have all three of those guys who were the top five quarterbacks, three in the top five picks, the top three quarterbacks all look good. And so this year, Trevor Lawrence is definitely the top dog, it looks like, but don't be surprised if there's a couple other quarterbacks that turn out to be pretty good too.
There's no massive stud left tackle that better than anybody else did or anything like that.
You'd never take a stud left tackle over a stud quarterback.
I would agree.
Ever.
Well, the problem is that you miss on so many stud quarterbacks.
You would only take a stud left tackle if there's no good quarterbacks.
Except for the fact that out of 10 stud quarterbacks, only two of them turn out to be studs.
Well, I know, but unless you have a quarterback, you got to take that chance, as we see every year. Doesn't always work, but everyone's looking for the next quarterback. And, some of them take a while to develop. Drew Brees was in, with the Chargers, was good, not great. In fact, his numbers were very similar to Trubisky's through his first several years. And then the Chargers gave up on him. They basically were like, we don't think he's going to be the quarterback of the future. And they drafted Philip Rivers, who turned out to be a very good player in his own right. And Brees signed with the Saints and just completely resurrected his career. And now he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. That's always a possibility with quarterbacks, too.
What should we ask Kevin, our trivia question? Are we going to ask him on Friday?
Well, we seem to be having a phone issue again because I and I texted Kevin. So we somehow lost him at the end of the last segment. I texted him to call back, and he hasn't called back yet.
All right. Well, he probably will. Maybe you got to call in on the number one number.
True, but he has all three numbers, so hopefully he can give us a call right back.
Well, he probably will, but we'll ask him. We'll ask the listeners right now. There's only been two quarterbacks that have won Heisman trophies, and I'll show you how hard it is to pick quarterbacks, and have won Super Bowls. We'll wait till Kevin calls back, and we'll ask him. Maddie, as my man, everybody, I won't say talks to different groups of people. Your gang, a lot of them are gainfully employed, working from home, but some aren't. What do you think the degradation has been since July in terms of people that are not, they weren't getting the continual $600? Now, $600 was a lot.
Well, we have Kevin, so real quick, ask him the trivia question.
Hey, Kevin, the trivia question is, there's only been two quarterbacks that have won Heisman trophies, because Manny and I were debating when you weren't here, is if you have a super stud left tackle, would you take him over a quarterback? And Matty said you never would. I said, except for the fact that there's 10 stud quarterbacks, only two of them work out. But there's only two guys that have won an Heisman Trophy and have won a Super Bowl as a quarterback. Can you name them?
Oh, let me see. I know Jim Plunkett. We did this. We did this like Thursday.
Oh, we did this, all right.
Because I know when I tweeted to you about Joe Theismann finishing second in the Heisman to Plunkett.
By the way, Joe
won a Super Bowl.
You guys were all glued to the TV on Saturday, I assume, where I was glued to the radio. And evidently the normal color man was home with a COVID positive test, so they dragged Joe Theismann off the sidelines to do the color, and God, was he good. The guy knows his football. I don't think anybody likes him as a person, but
I always thought he was a solid analyst, you know, because he did a lot of broadcasting in the 90s and early 2000s, and then he just kind of went away. Was it because people didn't like him as a person?
They absolutely didn't like. He got onto this some kind of routine. It wasn't religious, but it was something and something. If you didn't go with him, he was insufferable. That's some story, but I mean, to talk about a guy with a bad name is somebody you want to hang around with. It's got to be him. I mean, even Jim McMahon thought he was, you know. Anyway, but I bet, you know, here to despair.
Yeah. So who was the second? Who was the second QB? I don't remember.
Roger Staubach.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay.
Well, there really haven't been any since the 70s. That says a lot.
No, and I'm trying to think of who's even gotten close.
Yeah, I went over the list last week when we talked about this. Cam Newton is the only one that's really gotten close. He won the Heisman, and then he took the Panthers to a Super Bowl, which they lost to the Patriots. But other than that, most of the Heisman-winning quarterbacks of the last, you know, 20 or 30 years just haven't been very good pro quarterbacks.
Right.
And either, you know, didn't make it at all or just kind of had mediocre careers.
Speaking of Cam,
I can't imagine Lawrence, assuming he wins the Heisman, which he probably will, I can't imagine him being a washout. He impresses me not just as a really physically gifted quarterback, but as a guy who really has a feel for the game, along the lines of, Bird or Johnson in basketball, or Wayne Gretzky, you know, the guys who just sort of see things before everybody else does.
Kevin, you're going to have to call back in or something. You're really breaking up, so something's squirrely.
I'll call on a different number.
All right, something's squirrely today, but yeah, I would agree with Kevin on that. He's playing like a pro right now, I think. I think he's that good.
You saw the difference in Clemson. Between,
yeah.
I mean, the backup quarterback was not bad, don't get me wrong. I think he'll end up being a very good player, but they're unbeatable with Lawrence.
Yeah,
I think they're the best team. I think they're going to blow out Ohio State, and I think they're going to have no problem with Alabama, assuming they play them.
I was surprised. I didn't think Ohio State looked all that good against Northwestern.
They looked terrible.
Yeah. Well, like I said, but you were more aggressive on your criticism. But yeah, Northwestern came out with a good game plan. They just didn't have the horses. Kevin. Or before we go too far here, we got to talk a little bit about the market here this morning, and now we're starting to hear see some articles about how bad people are doing and how this bill. I don't know if it's going to resurrect people, Kevin, and maybe a little bit, but I'll tell you what, this is this is horrible. This reminds me of how the Gestapo used to torture people. They torture the hell out of them, and then they'd say, we all made a big mistake, and everything's okay, you're the wrong guy. They'd let the guy get good food and get himself back together for a couple of days, and then they'd show up and start torturing him again. And that seems like what we're doing to a lot of these companies, these bars, restaurants, and, you know, whatever else, small businesses of all kinds. And I don't know how you come back from this. We're reaching that point of no return where it almost doesn't matter. These places are just out. And I, you know, the idea that they're all going to be, you know, just everything will be okay because of Target and Walmart. Plus, I wanted to ask you, I know you don't listen to some of the liberal stuff, but the El Paso mayor last week, when he was on with Margaret Brennan, he said, well, a lot of the transfers of the COVID, people are catching it at big box stores, and she said, why don't you close those? And he says, I can't, there's a directive from Washington, you can't close it. Kevin, where would something like that come from, and why would they close it? In other words, they can close their own people, they can't close. Is there some kind of national pressure that a mayor can't close a Walmart? And where would that come from?
Well, if you like basking in conspiracies, and just because it's a conspiracy theory doesn't mean it's wrong, that you will have powerful people who have power and influence in Washington causing directives like that to happen.
But you're the one who brought up the new law after Katrina, that essentially gives the mayors and governors like a lot of this power, gives it, maybe the wrong term, but. And how is it?
No, it grants the states the power, not necessarily the governors. That's different.
Okay. All right. So, having said that, if Lori Lightfoot said, hey, we're closing the blue jean stores, and oh, by the way, we're closing Target too because they sell blue jeans, how does she not be able to do that? I'm not saying she should at all. But how could she not be able to do that?
Well, that's a really good question. All of this stuff, and some of it has been challenged. And, here in Michigan is an example. The governor got slapped down by the courts. So what did she do? She did an end run around that and had the health department, the Michigan Department of Health, issue health-related directives, which are still, I believe, illegal and are being challenged in court now. The question is, how deep are the pockets of the people who are going to challenge you? So if you go against that directive, are you going to get a very expedited case because the best attorneys are going to be in it and you're going to get slapped down anyway? And will that be embarrassing, and will that undercut your other power? And all of those, I think, are factors in how that could be implemented. Who's coming after you if you don't follow the directive is always the question.
Well, Kevin, I somewhere in this mess, and we always touch on it, and I can't. It's one of my themes, although I almost can't even really express it. It has to do with a lot of what government does is what the people are doing anyway. I mean, the fact that government is living beyond its means. Well, duh, most of the population is too, right? I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I mean, it doesn't stop at a line, and when these people operate one way and other people operate the other, I keep talking constantly, well, not constantly, but once in a while I'll say the newer generation, and that's wrong too. A lot of people, for some reason, and I don't know what it is, whether it's laziness, just not, laziness is probably the wrong term, there's no respect for any kind of a process, of any kind. I mean, whether it's a jury process, whether it's something. I mean, their opinion is worth the idea of 12 people on a jury sitting there for 3 months going over thousands of documents and hundreds of witnesses. Somebody read one article and they know as much as a juror. And that's just, oh no, that guy was guilty or he was innocent, you know, or she was. I mean, that's something we've come to live with where, I mean, I think you and I would say, wait a minute, those other people sat there for 4 months, they know a hell of a lot more about this than I do, why don't I just give them the benefit of the doubt? I mean, not that there hasn't ever been a bad jury, there probably has, but most of the time I think people try and do their best job, and it's just me. But how is it that, in these kinds of cases, do we, sure, if something really bad happened, does every governor and every mayor have some kind of a, you know, if an asteroid hits the place on a Sunday, can a mayor or the governor do something on Sunday night and an emergency power? I'd say just about everybody would say yes, including me. I mean, that's kind of what they're there for in some cases. But as this thing stretches beyond 15, 30, 60 days, a guy like me might say, now you have an obligation to go to the legislature. You've got this other stuff. And people look at me like I got two heads, which I maybe do. They'd say, what are you talking about? And it's, no, there's a process here. You get to do this for a while, and then you go back to the legislature and you say, is this a bad enough crisis or situation to where I can extend this like friggin' forever? And the answer may be yes, it may be no. But nobody, they lose patience with it after 15 days or 30 days. I mean, to me, I think Kevin, the processes are there. They're just not being followed. And nobody cares.
I agree. And, you know, there are some states that don't sunset the governor's ability to issue the state of emergency orders. But most of them do, because the philosophy behind it is action needs to be taken now. We don't have time for the legislative process to deal with it. And if you start thinking of, you know, serious storms, those kinds of things that where relief needs to be immediate, that's fine. But you have a very finite amount of time, and it may be a situation also where you can't even convene the legislature to do anything,
right.
If you wanted to. But at some point in time, you now have dealt with the immediacy of whatever the issue is, and you have time to convene the legislature. Now you should have to go to the legislature. That way, people throughout your state are represented in the process, and that's where it's breaking down. Is that you have governors and you have other officials, local officials like Lori Lightfoot, who feel the same way, that they don't have. You know, Lori Lightfoot doesn't have to go to the city council, and Pritzker doesn't have to go to the legislature. They just feel like they know better and they can do this for. They can tell everybody how they're going to deal with this.
Yeah, and I don't understand why people. I mean, some of the stuff that Lou mentions regarding. I mean, we could see, you know, Black Lives Matter and stuff, and you see some of the stuff on these tapes, you know, that they look like on a tape, like, you know, man, it's pretty awful. But I also know that you could get in the middle of the state in Madison and shoot 30 people, which, God, I hope that never happens. But if you did, I want that person. Obviously, out of society, as bad as the next one. But I also know that in this country, everybody gets a defense. And if I'm an attorney, I may have seen the same tape and say, God, who is this guy? But if the phone rings and says, hey, Chief, this guy is looking for an attorney, he deserves one, and he deserves a good one, and probably I got a 99% chance of losing. But who knows? The dude might have had 15 different psychologists say he's crazy, and somehow or another, you got to let out of. I mean, there might be something mitigating. It doesn't mean he didn't do it. That, you know, puts him in a different kind of jail or does something. Everybody gets a defense. I mean, I really believe that, and I believe a lot of people have died from that because of that. You know, from the Magna Carta, you don't just get to say, "I know better," or you don't say, "This guy's representing him. He must be something wrong with him that he shouldn't have a lawyer defend him." We're going way down the road here, Kevin, and I don't like it. I mean, I just. Everybody gets a defense. Everybody has a process. Every person in this country, from the president on down, has a check and a balance. That's the whole. That's what makes us different than anybody else. And if
I have a friend who, since high school, a friend from high school and since high school, who that's what he did. Was he was a public defender, and he defended the worst of the worst in murderers, and you know. He knew in many cases the best he was ever going to do for them was get them life instead of a needle in the arm. But he also, you know, saw some of the just most depraved, you know, terrible people. But he believed in the right to a defense. And so he did, you know, he did the job.
So, but how do you not if you're an American? I mean, that's us.
I don't know, but there's people who, you know, who seem to believe otherwise.
Well, but there's reasons that make us incredibly different and better than any, not that we do operate like that every day, but in theory than virtually any other country that ever existed. If we start throwing that out, what do we got?
We don't.
But I mean, we should never throw that out. And I,
But it, and that's playing out in a different way with, you know, all of these executive orders. It's usurping the power. It's telling us what the you know, who is and isn't wrong. You know, right up front. You know, local restaurant that I like is you know, was serving people. It just got its cease and desist order. Other places, though, you do have people who are pushing back on this. Where, you know, sheriffs, county sheriffs, who are saying, "No, I'm not enforcing it. It's not right." But see, none of this, you know, even if you issue the orders, it doesn't have the force of law behind it, because laws are laws, and fines that result from it, and other consequences have to be prescribed by the legislature.
Well, in real quick, because we got a dash. The mayor, I believe, of Park Ridge, or one of those places up there, went around every restaurant pushing back, and I gave them all a $500 fine and said, "I'll be here every day if I have to." And yet, some other places, the mayor's saying, just do, you know, keep the place clean, keep the tables apart, have people wear masks when they walk in, and stay open. So, how does that happen in the same state? I mean, that's wrong. One, you know, I mean, the laws are sloppy.
It happens because we have, too many people who started their political careers on condo boards.
S&P futures down 57. Yes, 57 points, and that's the highest I've seen it. We were 72 at one point. NASDAQ futures down 127. Not a good day, at least so far. We'll see if the buy the dippers come in. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.